Into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal for Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah.
No. Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your App Store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.
Friday Night Racing
on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie.
Right, you're very welcome along this Friday afternoon to Friday Night Racing. It's Ger Gilroy and Johnny Ward with you every Friday afternoon at 3 o'clock, right across all of the OTB social channels. You can get us on the OTB Sports app. You can get us on YouTube, Facebook, on Twitter, however you want to get us. You'll get us. And then obviously on Friday evenings, we're on Off the Ball on News Talk as well. Friday Night Racing brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie or follow the Twitter account at HRI Racing. And the hashtag is Every Racing Moment. Johnny, how are you?
Good, Ger. All the better for Nace returning tomorrow. All the jumps racing is off in England again tomorrow. And we've had like a scatter of cancellations this week. But Dundalk on shortly and good jumps card at Nace tomorrow. Then the weather is picking up and spring is on the way. So lots of reasons to be positive, I think.
Yeah, and the ground becomes very, very important at this time of year because it can dictate how well or otherwise any of these big horses are going to go in certain races. And particularly with us looking forward to Cheltenham, the weather all of a sudden becomes more than just an idle form of passing the time.
It does, it does. I mean, we do love talking about the weather in Ireland. I mean, it was by far the most read story, despite the, I suppose, the coronavirus just being the lead story all the time. The most read story was this big cold snap coming to Ireland. And then you read about it and, like, it barely touches 0 degrees. It's not even that cold at all. But in Ireland, it's almost like a national emergency if a little bit of snow falls. But to be fair, it did actually prompt a few cancellations. And as you say, the ground is a factor now because trainers don't really want to be running their horses on kind of testing ground when Cheltenham is so near now. It is really closing in, you know, and it's going to be different Cheltenham this year, but I think in terms of quality it'll be a normal year. And now all the prep races are pretty much concluding, and I'd say Nace tomorrow is going to be one of the last few cards where you will see horses go on to run in Cheltenham from it. We had Newbury and Warwick tomorrow were going to be good cards. They've been postponed. I think Newbury with its Betfair sponsor card, that's going to be next Sunday week now, I think. And that's going to be an intriguing card for Cheltenham as well. But after that, Ger, it's kind of all roads do lead to Cheltenham and the ground will start drying out as well.
And look, we'll talk about Nace in a little while. Before we get to our guest this week, I do want to talk to you about a press release that came through today from the IHRB and from Horse Racing Ireland, where they're addressing many of the concerns that people had about the integrity of the sport and their plans, particularly to get hold of any of the issues around drug testing. It's quite a comprehensive plan, and I don't really know what the politics are in all this and what the relationship is, but it certainly seemed like HRI are out there making sure that the IHRB are doing what they're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, and I'd have to say, you know, these are difficult enough times for newspapers and the media, as we all know, but the media has played a big role in this because Darragh O'Connor had an article with Jim Bulger there a few months back. Jim Bulger raised the issue of potentially of drugs in sport. And ever since then, it's kind of snowballed where we've had articles in the Sunday Independent from Paul Kimmage and the Sunday Times from David Walsh. And there's been a lot of pressure on the IHRB's drug testing. Nothing's really been proven untoward at all, but there's definitely been an enhanced kind of speculation about what might or might not be going on in sport. And as such, I think there's been work done by the IHRB and HRI. The HRI came out with a statement today, a statement on drug testing in racing, 4,000 plus horse to be sampled by the IHRB in Ireland in 2021, 600 samples to be taken at public auction. No notice testing to be applied as IHRB veterinary team now granted authorised officer status. That's very significant. And tender to be published shortly for installation of CCTV in all racecourse stable yards. And you'll know what that's in reference to, Ger, because we had the Viking Horde situation. Charles Burns actually appealed his suspension. Charles Burns was suspended on the basis of negligence that he'd kind of left the horse unattended. But I suppose the big issue there was that nobody could prove what went on because there was no
CCTV. Yeah.
no CCTV. So Charles's appeal, rather disappointingly, that was heard on Tuesday, but we haven't an outcome of that. So that's kind of dragging on. But I think it did emphasize that there was money put aside for CCTV in racecourse stable yards. And I think the Viking Horse situation, consider the negative publicity, the damage to the animal and the danger it puts to human beings around him, I think it emphasized that's very important. But it's been a tough time for the IHRB, you know, with a shambolic start of a race at Nace recently as well that put it under pressure. And I think it does need to come out of this in a better place.
Yeah, and I actually think that the broad sweep of measures that they've announced today, that sets targets, that sets an attention, and that says, look, we are doing what we're supposed to be doing. I'm never that impressed by the number of tests. Like, fair enough, you're doing loads of tests, but are they the right tests? Is it unannounced? Are you target testing? That's what the world's best anti-doping programs do in human sport, and it looks like they're trying to learn as many lessons as they possibly can from that. So no announcements of tests, and actually this is going to be on licensed and unlicensed premises, so you can't secrete the horse that you're doping away in a field and then be like, well, you can't get in there, there's like a magic wall in front of that, you're not allowed in. Actually, now they are going to be allowed to test wherever the horse is that they want to test. That's a very positive step forward. And there's also going to be tracking now of all foals born, essentially the blood doping passport that we have in human sport, an equine equivalent to that. And that was one of the measures that was called for over the last number of months since Jim Bulger started this conversation. So you have to welcome that.
You do. And what you mentioned there in terms of the, you know, the 2021 foal crop will be the first to be issued with an e-passport to allow for greater oversight. But also a whole of life thoroughbred traceability system for equines, including 30-day foal notification, will be developed. And this has been an issue as well, because hair sampling in theory can go back to the start of the horse's life and indicate if there are, for example, steroids in the system. But this it's very positive. And I think, as you mentioned, this unannounced testing, including not only stable yards but also stud farms, it should be an absolute must. I mean, I don't see any reason against this. I would stress that Jim Bulger got a debate going here. There's still no proof whatsoever that there's widespread drug use in racing, and you should definitely read as much as you can into what goes on and the testing that goes on, and kind of come up with your own conclusion, because racing has a lot of work to do on this. But don't go to bed tonight thinking that racing is riddled with drugs, because there's no proof whatsoever of that, and today is a step in the right direction in that regard as well.
Well, you know, there's no proof thing. I can see why, as somebody involved in the sport, that's the point that you want to get across. There are people who look at all sports and have naturally built up an air of skepticism in recent years, given the proliferation of doping that we see in rugby, in soccer, in cycling, in athletics. So I think when you have a day like today where they say, well, look, these are the measures that we're taking, and hold us to account on these measures, that's a positive, and I think everybody can get behind that. So look, let's move on. It's 10 minutes into the show. Friday Night Racing, brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Our guest this week is Simon Torrens, who had two winners at the Dublin Racing Festival last Saturday. Simon, good afternoon to you. How are you getting on?
Good, yeah. Pleasure to be on. Things are going all right.
Yeah, not a bad Saturday afternoon for you.
It's a bit of an understatement.
Yeah, no, it was good now. Couldn't complain with. Probably one of the best Saturdays I've had in a while, anyway.
Look, I think we've got the commentary for A Wave of the Sea. This is the Matheson Handicap Chase. This is on, it's a Joseph O'Brien trained horse and obviously ridden by Simon Torrens. So let's relive this.
Being followed by Intukas and Mark Walsh, running on as A Wave of the Sea, and then comes the Shunter, being followed by Top Moon and Machukas. They come for the final fence, and it's Campucci Mix on the far side. In the centre is A Wave of the Sea, good jump, and comes to pick it up. A Wave of the Sea, the blue cap from Intukas. On the outside is Top Moon. It's 1-2-3 for JP McManus, and it's A Wave of the Sea, and Simon Torrens coming on the outside is Top Moon as the outward the line. A Wave of the Sea from Top Moon. A Wave of the Sea's just won it.
Ooh, that was pretty close. Have you watched that back?
I watched it back that evening, all right. But apart from that, not really, no.
Do you know how close the horse coming up on your outside, do you know how close he gets to you in advance of the line? Or are you so consumed with trying to get the horse over the line as fast as you can, you don't actually have time to kind of sneakily have a look back?
I could hear him And I obviously knew that my horse could feel him coming. I knew he was getting pretty close to me whenever my horse started pulling out a wee bit extra. It's just more so you can hear them coming, and you can hear them coming up behind you, so you know they're not too far away.
Right, and can you obviously, I mean, this is a stupid question, obviously, because I have never been on a horse in the middle of a race, but can you in any way hear the track commentary getting more and more excited because obviously there's a close finish as opposed to a horse coasting home?
You can, especially during the summertime when there'd be, you know, sometimes in the wintertime when there'd be loads of wind and that, you mightn't hear it as much, but during the summertime you definitely would, the likes of Galway or that. In that particular moment in Leopardstown, I didn't hear a lot, now, being honest.
Right, so all you're hearing is the 2 tons of horse coming on your outside and silently praying, don't make it, don't make it, don't make it, to the one behind you. So what's that feel like then when you actually touch off a winner in a massive race with like 20 odd horses like that?
It's hard to put into words. You know, it is great. Looking to me, it was my biggest winner in my career to date. So it was something that I was overcome with emotion, I suppose. It's a great feeling and it's a great buzz, and it was great to be a part of the weekend that was in it.
Yeah, because obviously it's a huge weekend. I mean, we've kind of been talking about the Dublin Racing Festival. It's relatively new, but like as long as you've been becoming a full-time jockey, it's been a, for the last 4 years, it's been a centrepiece of Irish racing. And then the day actually arrives and you've got horses that are contenders. How much of an expectation did you have going into that race, and what kind of pressure did you put yourself under?
No real expectations as such. As I said, it was great to be a part of the weekend, and it was great to have two rides on that day. Obviously, Away of the Sea, he was a class horse over hurdles. Whether he put his best foot forward there over fences was, you know, that's what I was waiting to see if he'd do. And the lad later on, I won on it before, and I was hopeful that, you know, if he put his best foot forward, he'd run well again. So I didn't really put myself under any pressure at all. It's horse racing at the end of the day. It's all about, you need to have a good bit of luck, I suppose, and if the horses perform on the day.
Yeah, and I suppose just going into it, Simon, what is it like, the Dublin Racing Festival, in the sense of there not being a crowd there? Because the audience is home, people watching on TV, watching on their phones, watching on their laptops, would have been absolutely massive, and there was so much kind of hype about it on WhatsApp about all the racing that was going ahead. Does it feel any way strange, or is this almost the new normal at this stage because you're doing it for the guts of 10 or 11 months now?
Yeah, I suppose it is kind of the new normal in a sense. Obviously the crowd's not been there at the start. It was definitely a lot stranger than usual. But we've kind of adapted and we've got used to it. So it's kind of got this, it's kind of the normal now. But no, look at this Dublin Racing Festival. It's the best of Irish horses taking on each other. So you can't really compete with it. Like,
it was a kind of a strange one for you as well, because to win two handicaps of that nature, you know, it's the equivalent really of having a double at Cheltenham, like, because those races are so competitive and the prize money is so great, and almost like any other day of the year, that's a massive headline. But it just so happens that you did it the day where, like, Willie Mullins is winning races all over the place, you have Honeysuckle doing what she did, you have all these great ones, and the greatest achievement of your life, which is off the charts, is kind of almost down the way in the race report because there's so much going on.
Yeah, look, it was great. As I said before, it was great to have two rides on a card like that. But to come out of it with two winners was, you know, it was a dream come true. I definitely didn't think going into the day that I'd come out with two winners.
When you win the first one, do you think that, does it give you an extra boost of confidence going into the handicap hurdle because you're on a high? It's almost like a goal scorer who gets an early goal. His confidence is up and everything's a bonus after that. Or do you ride the same race?
It does. It gives you a bit of confidence. You don't think as much. You think that you're riding as you think you're riding the best of your ability. So you go out and you treat it like every other race, but the confidence is high, and the confidence is oozing out here, and I suppose horses pick up on that as well.
And the confidence must be pretty high at the moment because you're having a really good season.
Yeah, it's not too bad. Look, things have been going great. This season's really kicked off, so hopefully it'll continue away.
So tell us, what stage are you at in your career at the moment? You're a conditional jockey, you're a claimer, you're riding out your claim at the moment. These are terms that we've been trying to define for people in over the last couple of years, and I'm nearly getting there in terms of understanding it. But for everybody else who's only catching up, what stage are you at the moment?
At the moment, I'm a 5-pound claimer. I've 6 winners left of my 5-pound claim, and then I go down to 3-pound.
And how many winners do you need to ride out the 3-pound claim?
You need an extra 10 then to ride out your 3. So it goes 25, 25, and 10.
Okay, and after that, that's it. You're off your own weight, and you're on your own, and you're full-time professional, elbows out, trying to get as many rides as you can.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it is. And look, I suppose you have to hit the ground running when you lose your claim, because things get a lot harder.
That's the really fascinating bit for me, that in the conversations that we've had in recent years, that with particularly jockeys who get to that stage, they're told to expect a bit of a barren spell, and you have to kind of prepare yourself mentally for the fact that you've reached this level now where your skills and your experience are so high and your success rate and your strike rate is so high that everybody really wants you, and then all of a sudden you're not claiming anymore, and they're like, yeah, I can just get another claimer who's got 5 pounds who might be not quite as good as you, but I'm getting those 5 pounds, so I'm going to take those. Like, this is kind of, people are going to tell you in retrospect, oh, these are the best days of your life.
Yeah, I suppose they are. And when you're a claimer, it's all about trying to sell yourself. You try to ride as many winners as you can and build up contacts, as many many contacts as you can. And hopefully you land into a nice job there with somebody that has plenty of horses behind them and that are going to support you. As you say, when you lose your claim and there's more claimers come along, it can get very tough.
So much of it is, I think, Ger, as well. I'm interested to see what you think of this, Simon. I think so much of it is down, like, talent is a large part of the package, but so much of it is down to working hard, working with as many trainers as you can within reason to get yourself about, developing your contacts, being good as a jockey with owners, maybe living a good life kind of off the race course as well, where you focus on the job at hand, because I guess, the percentages are so, the margins are so tight, you kind of have to give it everything. You look at the top jockeys in Ireland now, consummate professionals who, like, dedicate themselves to the sport, and I guess that's part of it as well, that you have to, you could have a day like last Saturday now and go backwards because you think this is easy and sure, this will all come natural to me.
Exactly. Look, you only seem to get out of what you put in this game. I spent many a year, like, I'm 24 now. I spent many a time at the start of my career struggling and not getting rides. And look at it, you start to think, well, I started to think, to myself, should I go and do something else? But I was always taught from a young age that you only get out of what you put in. So you have to sacrifice a lot. You have to be dedicated, and you just have to keep working hard and keep the head down, and hopefully it'll pay off, and you'll have plenty of good days. But along with them good days, you have to take the low days as well. It's up and down. Racing is a bit of a vicious circle in a sense, because it just goes round in circles. One minute you're on high, and the next minute then you're struggling to get rides. And look, that's part and parcel of it.
So why did you stick with it?
I suppose it was just something that I always wanted to do from a young age. I always thought about doing it anyway. I never actually sat in a horse till I was 15. I was kind of at school, I was into rugby and soccer and the usual sort of things, and I always had in the back of my mind that I'd love to become a jockey at some point down the line. And my father, it was kind of more probably his dream at that stage than probably mine. But he said, look, if you're being serious about this, he says, you're going to have to learn how to ride. So he sent me up to my uncle that trains up in Tyrone, up to Mervyn. And he taught me to ride at the age of 15, and it kind of just all took off from there.
Right, wow, that's a bit mad. So, obviously, your uncle is a trainer, so there's horses in the family, but it's kind of not the immediate family. Were you ever around horses before that?
Yeah, well, I suppose my father always kind of kept a horse or two at home, a pony or two. Not that I ever really rode them or anything. They were kind of just always out in the field or something like that. But it was just kind of more so watching like the race on a Saturday on Channel 4 race, and you know, you'd see the likes of Sarai P or Barry Garrity, Ruby, them lads riding winners in England and on the big days and that, and that's kind of where I'd say I kind of got the bug.
And then the first time you sit on a horse properly in your uncle's and you start to ride out, do you remember that?
Yeah, I remember it very well, actually. He taught me to ride on a quiet pony. And if memory served me right, I'm pretty sure he told me, father, not long after, that I wouldn't sit in an armchair.
That tough love, I guess.
Exactly, yeah, tough love. Look, whenever I heard that, it nearly set a fire inside me that, you know, look, I'm going to prove you wrong. I'm gonna try and become the best that I can be.
And so how do you go from that then to, like, when do you start getting good? When do you start thinking, actually, you know what, I am going to do this. I'm going to prove you all wrong and I'm going to follow my dream.
Well, I suppose it was shortly after my father passed away that my uncle turned around and he says, look, I think, I've done as much as I can do with you. He says, I think you'd be better off maybe moving down to the Curragh. And getting a bit more experience that down. But he sent me off down to Johnny Mortis and I started an apprenticeship down there, and that's kind of really where things started in really getting serious for me.
Right, and what was that like?
Yeah, look, it was definitely an eye-opener. Going down there, you know, I was going from a small family-run yard up in Tyrone down to the Curragh. Johnny was starting out training and, you know, it was a massive string. It was massive for me to just be even going down and working for Johnny Morta. You know, I was used to be seeing him on the TV on a Saturday, you know, riding big group winners. So to get the chance to go down and become apprentice to him was something huge.
Because we've had him in studio and we've had him on Zoom, and he is like the life and soul and great crack. And every time we talk to him about the apprentice, but I'm hard on them. And he, you know, the face drops and it's like no messing. And he's very clear, he's hard on his apprentices because he wants them. Now, it's clearly from a place of love, but was he tough?
I suppose he was tough, but he was tough but fair. The thing he'd be most tough on me about was probably my weight. Look at it, from playing rugby and that at school, I suppose I was naturally heavier than most lads. And when I went down to Johnny's to be an apprentice, I was always going to struggle with my weight. So where he come in, he was tough on me about my weight, but at the same time, he was very helpful. He gave me tips on how to try and keep my weight level. You know, he was always on to me about make sure you're going out running in the evening times and that sort of thing. So he was tough in certain aspects, but he was very helpful in other ways. And, you know, everything had to be down to a fine tee when it come to riding. I learnt a lot from him, you know, how to improve my riding, learnt all about pace and, you know, lengths and everything. So, no, he was very good that way.
I definitely say that the transition from playing rugby to becoming a jockey has been done by very, very few. Is there any sort of link between the two in terms of the training you do, squatting or core or anything like that? Because it's not, you don't hear many jockeys who used to play rugby.
No, I suppose like the training, it would be similar to that. Like you want to have good core strength and good muscles in your legs and that. I don't know. I just look at I always loved rugby. Through school, I suppose the school I attended was a big rugby school. But then again, the back of my mind, I always thought, you know, I'd like to try and become a jockey anyway. So changing over, I was fairly fit anyway from playing rugby. Well, I was as fit as I could have been. But when I went come down here and started riding for Johnny, I quickly found out it was a totally different type of fitness was needed to become a jockey.
And where are you actually from? Because I was kind of supposing in my head, because I met your dad at the race a few times when he'd have winners, particularly on the summer circuit. Always thought, just a nice man, strong northern accent. And then I heard you interviewed, and I was like, I don't know where that lad is from. He sounds like he's either from Kildare or he's from the north or somewhere in between.
It's a great combination, Johnny. Let me just say, it's a great combination being both from the north and from Kildare.
It is, yeah. Can we get to the question there, Simon?
I'm from Castledarg originally in County Tyrone. I suppose a lot of I get teased a lot when I go up home. They always say, "Oh, you've lost your accent." But I suppose when I first come down here, not many people in Johnny Mortar's yard could understand me for the first week or two. But I suppose I've been living down here 8 years now. So I've kind of lost the northern accent in a sense. But half an hour in the phone with Muller, and it soon comes back.
And it's even coming and going there in the last sort of minute. But your dad, what's your dad's connection? Because obviously your uncle trains, and was your dad from a racing background as well? Because that was something I was wondering as well in terms of his love of the game.
No, I don't think there was much of a racing background. I suppose my grandfather probably kept. I think he kept a couple of work horses for ploughs and that, and a couple of ponies and different things like that. I think probably they all kind of probably learned how to ride at some point. And Mervyn, he wanted to go on and do more. You know, Mervyn's very tall. I suppose probably becoming a jockey was probably out the window because of the weight and opportunities back in those days. So he decided that he was going to start training, and that's where it come from with him. He started training race horses and it kind of took off from there.
The Tyrone accent is much sexier than the Kildare accent, and you know that's just a little bit of friendly advice from somebody who has grown up in a dual accent house. I would say certainly.
What are you trying to tell us there?
I'm just telling you that I wish I had a Belfast accent instead of the non accent that I have now. Life would have been different and better, and certainly you'd be a bit more intimidated by me, Johnny. Simon, to go back to the weight issue, what's the crack with that now? How do you manage that?
I'm actually lucky enough at the minute that my weight's actually, it is fairly good. I suppose when I was apprentice in the flat, my weight, you know, you're claiming 10 pounds as you start off as an apprentice, you start claiming 10, and you know the weights in the flat are obviously a lot lower. When I changed and become conditional, you start off with claiming 7, and bottom weight over jumps is 9-10 now with the whole COVID coming in. The weights were raised, so bottom weight's 9-12, so I'm comfortable enough claiming off bottom weight, so I'm very lucky in that aspect.
Right, and is that because you've got a good gym routine and a good fitness regime as well, and you like actually looked into the diet, or is that just kind of what you're walking around with would be normally?
I suppose a bit of both. You know, obviously you have to try and keep yourself as fit as possible, and I suppose riding out every day and being racing more regularly helps keep your weight in check, and I suppose, you know, eating right plays a big part as well. So I'd say it's a combination of all them little factors.
Are you good at that, the eating properly? Because it's great to say it, but it's much harder to be organised and to have your Tupperware and do all that crap as opposed to, I'm just going to stop in here to the petrol station and have a little roll.
It is a lot easier said than done. I'm actually fortunate enough, my girlfriend's actually, she's a chef, so she kind of knows what I should and shouldn't be eating, but then again, I suppose the odd occasion, maybe a Saturday or Sunday night, I could find myself tempted to go for a Chinese.
Well, that's all right. Occasionally, I see you're planning well and picking well as well. That's a good idea. And then, like, so what's next in terms of your plan? Obviously, you're in the race at the moment for the conditionals, I think. And so that's great because that helps you get out there and get your name out there. And as you said, it's all about selling yourself now. So what do you have a time frame in your head for when you want to finish writing out your claim and what might happen after that?
No, look, I haven't exactly set out a time frame in my own head. You know, I suppose, look, it'd be great to win the conditional title this year, if I was fortunate enough to do so. We'll give it our best shot anyway. You know, see how things go, as long as I'm getting plenty of rides and riding winners and being consistent. That would be the big thing for me now.
How important has Aidan Howard been as well? Sorry, Ger, in terms of, I think Aidan is a trainer who wouldn't have an awful lot of horses, but I suppose telling enough that JP McManus has had horses with him and fantastic strike rate, and you seem to have blossomed into a lovely team as well.
Look, Aidan's been very, very, very good in terms of helping my career. You know, I knew Aidan from my time in Tony Martin's, and when I left Tony's and I decided to relocate back to the Curra, Aidan just said to me that if I wanted to come into him a morning or two a week, to do so. So I kind of went in a couple of mornings a week, and then I got offered a full time job, and I kind of haven't looked back since. You know, and he's been very good. Like, he wouldn't have the biggest team in the world, but I suppose he's had it long enough. You know, and he's been training for, I think, nearly 15 years. He's a good team around him. Jenny Lynch there kind of runs the yard, you know, putting horses on and off the walker and checking their legs and that. And he's a great bunch of lads riding out. So it was great to become a part of that team, and he gave me loads of opportunities and kind of steered me in the right direction.
The one thing that I just wanted to ask you about, it's obviously the weight's important and the fitness is important, but the skills of riding and race riding is something that you didn't have a whole heap of experience. A lot of the people we've spoken to, like, they're under 8s and under 10s, kind of, and they're in pony races and they're doing point to points. You kind of missed that start, that part of it, until 15, 16. I think you did a year of pony racing, if I'm right. So you've got to kind of try and catch up on the 10,000 hours. How did you do that? How did you become a horseman who's confident and has a relationship with the horses, no matter when and how many times you get up on them?
I suppose just hard work and keeping the head down and listening to what everybody around me was telling me. I suppose, looking back on it now, you know, when I did start off as an apprentice to Johnny, and, you know, even was getting a few rides over jumps until I got my conditional license, I was seeing the younger lads come along and flying and riding heaps of winners, and, you know, it was disheartening for myself. I was thinking, you know, I'm putting in as much effort and I'm getting nothing out of it. But looking back on it, I suppose they had a lot more experience. They were riding horses for maybe they were 5 or 6, 7, you know, they were going pony race and all that. So it just took time for myself to kind of find my feet and really get going. But it was just basically just listening to people around me and listening to their advice and every day wanting to improve.
And now, obviously, you're at an age where you're mature enough to take whatever success is coming your way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Look, I think it was kind of nearly a blessing in disguise. I've started to appreciate everything a bit more. Every winner I have, I appreciate it. You know, the likes of last Saturday, like, it'll be a day that I won't forget in a hurry. And it was definitely my best day in racing so far, and it probably made me appreciate it a good bit more, knowing the other side of things.
When we started the show, we were obsessed with talking week in, week out about the golden generation of jockeys, and since we've started, essentially the vast majority of them have retired, which has left essentially a vacancy in National Hunt for that next generation of jockeys to come through. Obviously, Paul Townend sits there at the very top alongside Rachel Blackmore at the moment, and they're duking it out for the title this year, but there's room for that next generation of Irish jockeys who automatically will be some of the best in the world to put their head up. Is that even something you've thought about, or like trying to be part of that next generation of the next Ruby, the next AP?
Not particularly, but it is something like, you know, the likes of Paul and Rachel and Mark Walsh and that, like, they're not going to be around forever. The same way AP and Ruby and that, you know, everybody retires at some point. I suppose there is the next generation coming along, and, you know, I'm even seeing lads 18 or 19 coming along and they're doing very well nearly straight away. And, you know, that's nearly, it's driving you the whole time to try and improve yourself and try and keep yourself at the top of your game. And it's making you stride to try and become the best that you can be, and hopefully climb the ladder and be up there in a few years time, like the likes of Paul and Rachel and Mark and them.
Yeah. And look, last one for me is obviously the two big winners were for JP. They're in those very famous colours. Like when you were sitting watching racing your dad on Channel 4, it was the green and gold that was winning some of those big races too. So again, it is kind of living out your childhood dreams.
Yeah, completely. Look, I suppose when I started, I didn't think that I'd get the opportunities that I've ended up getting. And I suppose a big thanks has to go to Mr. McManus and Mr. Frank Berry and that for putting a bit of faith and trust in me. You know, it's great opportunities to be getting, and hopefully they'll continue.
Ian Henderson, captain in Ireland on Sunday against France. Are we going to win?
Hopefully, yeah.
And are you a signed up member of the Billy Burns Ulster fan club as well?
I am, yeah.
You're a Billy Burns fan, you like him, you think he's going to bounce back?
Should do, yeah.
Very good, very good. Simon, best of luck. Thanks a million for joining us.
Thank you.
Just one last question, if that's all right, Ger.
Go for it.
Yeah, have you any idea what you might be riding at Cheltenham? You are the man the people want now. We have the conditionals in demand. Anton, you're looking forward to potentially riding there, Simon. There's, we can look forward to ourselves in a month's time.
I haven't actually had a look, to be honest. Look at Cheltenham, I suppose I'll cross that bridge when I come to it. Nothing's been said to me yet of potential rides or anything like that. Obviously, you've the Martin Pipe, and it'd be great to get a ride in it. My first ride over there last year on Kilfenora for Eddie Harty, and that was great. So, look at, I suppose it'd be great to get a couple of rides over there if I could this year.
I guess just finally as well, you're obviously the envy of a lot of jockeys over what you did last Saturday. You're probably the envy of a lot more people and the fact that you're dating a chef. What did she have for you last Saturday night when you came home?
It was actually only a salad for us. I was doing light
salad.
Monday.
That is the joy of it, yeah.
Yeah, so I was doing light Monday, so I had to watch the kilos, so I just had a plain saddle.
Well, it's Valentine's Day this weekend. Hopefully you get something nicer.
Yeah.
Simon, good stuff. Thanks a million for joining us.
Perfect, thank you.
Cheers. We do keep talking about it, Johnny, that next generation of jockeys, and a lot of them are putting their hands up with really big performances just recently. And it's not just competent performances, it's actually performances where they've got to dig something out. That was a competitive race. The other race that he won, there was a mistake early in the race before actually guiding him home. And I don't know, look, I obviously know very little about these, but it seems to me the ability to win those big handicaps suggests that you have to be a very good horse rider to be able to come through them.
Yeah, like, exactly. You can't win a couple of races like that. I'm just looking up here. You can't win a race like that without being good. I mean, it's those handicap chases in particular, and to a lesser extent, the horses are seriously, seriously competitive. You're riding at a track that's it's a very fair track lap some, but it is tricky as well. You can get trouble in running, and things happen quickly. I'm just looking at Jack Kennedy was born in April 1999, which would put him at 21 at the moment. So you're just talking about how you can have precocious lads like Jack Kennedy, but you have lads like Simon who's had to work and graft, and it was an overnight thing on Saturday, but it took him time to get there. He was a late vocation in terms of riding horses, and a lot of it is just down to perseverance and not giving up. And like days like to ride winners like that for JP McManus, just it's worth an awful lot of publicity. And
well, I got the impression. Yeah. That's the other part about this. If JP thinks you're good, you're good.
Yeah, for sure. Like JP and Jiggins and whatever, they will give their jockeys opportunities. But I mean, the actual, like, what would you pay somebody to you know, for the publicity of two winners on a stage like that? And I have seen, I hadn't spoken to him before at any real length. I got the impression he's just very, very much his feet are on the ground. Like, he knows what he's doing. He's not going to blow his chance, because I think there is an opportunity for a jockey to come up and be that next big jockey, you know. And I think Mark Walsh, who obviously rides a lot for JP McManus, I think he has to grasp the opportunity now that Barry Geraghty isn't there. Mark Walsh is, to me, possibly the most talented rider full stop in Ireland. I think he's absolutely outstanding, but he's in his early 30s now, so he's kind of gotten to that stage where he's hopefully going to kick on in his career. But those younger guys in their early to mid-20s, you know, they have big opportunities coming up.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, this is the bit where I tell you about how much I'm kicking your ass. There were two bonus points races for the Tote 10 to follow at the Dublin Racing Festival, and I had the winners of both. Honeysuckle and Cowboy, along with place points from Abracadabras, means that I have overtaken you and lead by 28 points. Can I carry this form into Cheltenham, or will you make some changes to your stable in the transfer window ahead of the trip to Prestbury Park, where there will be 7 bonus races on offer? So that makes things a bit more difficult. Visit tote.ie for all the latest in Tote and 10 to follow news. Go on, what was your question?
What did you make of Honeysuckle?
Sensational. I was talking about this on OTBM during the week. You're watching Honeysuckle and you're like, oh, everybody needs to stop and watch this. It felt like it was, Mo Farah in the Olympics running the whole of the field down, or it felt like Usain Bolt, or it felt like watching Leo Messi.
Honeysuckle would like the references there, but we give her on her merit. She was like, I know what you mean. It was like, if you backed her at halfway, you're like, this is over.
Well, I don't know that much. And I'm like, she goes to the front a little bit earlier and like, oh, geez, this is very early. There's no way you're going to be. And then it's just crushing, like absolutely devastation for the rest of the field, to the point where you're kind of telling everybody that you meet since, going, look, you get on the Honeysuckle bandwagon ahead of Cheltenham, start falling in love with this horse, do the reading in the background, find out that, you know, she's a bit of a madam back at home, thinks she owns the place, and like, it couldn't be happening to nicer people.
You're absolutely, you got to be a sucker for the Honeysuckle after that. She's ridden by Rachel Blackmore. She's a mare, the public latch onto mares. But I was actually, you look at her bare form and kind of, she looks like she's doing enough at the end of her races. This performance was another level altogether. And she just looked like she's developed into this kind of machine that is like, whatever you throw at me, I'm just going to eat it for breakfast. And if she goes to Champion Hurdle, which now looks very likely, we have a lot to look forward to in Cheltenham when, the lads who support Gaelic Games, like, they're kind of, these are tough times. You're waiting for your teams to come back, not deemed an elite sport and all that. We're very lucky in racing. You know, it's just, the racing's been going ahead since June. Granted, you can't go, but top racing last weekend, and we really now, I'm beginning to really get the buzz for Cheltenham. It's been a strange year. Like, I've had so little interest in Cheltenham coming up compared to other years, just because of the year that it's been and the fact that it won't be there. But now when you see performances like that, she's going to take on another mare in Epitant, and some of the performances last weekend were out of this world. It was really, really top class stuff, and it had everyone buzzing and forgetting the fact that we're in a pandemic for even a few hours, you know.
Yeah, so Cowboy was the other thing we should just briefly talk about. Cowboy wins the Irish Gold Cup, and then very quickly afterwards, like, well, I'm not really sure if this is, doesn't really like Cheltenham.
Yeah, it sounds like he might go for the Stayers race. I guess you have to have some consideration for David Mullins, you know, who he had on a few weeks ago, who would have liked, I guess he would have ridden Cowboy. He was generally his ride, and I think he would have won on him. Danny Mullins couldn't have given him a better ride, but David's would have been, probably in the position to. That's his lot, though. I think he was happy with his decision. Danny was brilliant on the horse. Doesn't really seem to. He's a bad record around fences at Cheltenham. But the performances of Shaq and Poursois was breathtaking. Kilcruet and the bumper was visually out of this world altogether. And then Gallard de Menil, Calixios, Appreciatus. It was just like one performance after the next. But for me, I think Honeysuckle was kind of the best of the lot. It was sensational to watch. And it was like, sometimes if you get a horse who's like taking the running up earlier than expected, Usually it's because he or she is just running too freely. But Rachel Blackham was just like, listen, I've had enough of this. I'm just going to the front. This is over.
Yeah. It's the type of thing that if there was a Black Beauty movie and in the race, the horse ran away from the rest of the field, you'd be like, ah, that's ridiculous. That's not possible. But actually, you're watching it unfold in real time, and the camera work is so great these days. You can feel the Jeep speeding up to try and keep up with her. It's like fairly sensational stuff. So, anything at Nace this weekend that we should be talking about?
It's a good card. They have a precautionary inspection. I was actually just out before we came to the show, and the wind was scary. But I think it's not quite as bad in Kildare, and I think it's going to level off a bit tomorrow. There's a precautionary inspection, but we have a lot of cancellations. I don't think this meet will be called off, which is a real delight because English jumps racing doesn't go ahead tomorrow. The obvious race will be the Mayor's Novice Chase, which honours Opera Hat. Ellie May is likely favourite there. That's at 140. I'm quite intrigued by Yukon Lil in this race. She's the Willie Mullins second string. Willie Mullins has absolutely dominated this race. She's going back to 2 miles, and she's getting 12 pounds off Ellie May with Paul Townend on her and Mark Walsh and Ellie May. Ellie May is really, really likable, but I think Yukon Lil, if she can get her jumping together, she's a massive danger. So have a look out for the prices. We haven't even mentioned, of course, the big gamble last Sunday that nearly came off, but maybe we'll do that in another day.
Grant, that was the three horses. The third one of the leg didn't come off without it.
Yeah, it was like three horses in Sutherland, Musselburgh, like on a weekend at the Dublin Racing Festival. And all of a sudden, bookmakers, within a very short space of time, had liabilities of millions. And this was because the horses were such big prices. Different owners, different trainers, yet they were being backed by several people, some of them with new accounts, in these trebles and trixies and everything. And because the prices were so big, and all the horses were sent off favoured, two of them were odds on, but they were sent off, like, say, the night before, they were like 14 to 1, 20 to 1, 16 to 1 or whatever. And I quickly worked out, if you did £100 Trixie on the prices that were available, you'd win just shy of a million. And that was if the three of them won, but that was just one bet. And the first two absolutely bolted up, comes down to the last one, who's cantering three out in Musselburgh in some race that nobody would otherwise remember, apart from the connections of the horse involved. And whether he wanted to save the bookmaking industry or whether he wanted to do this or whether he just wasn't good enough in the day, he faded from the second last, and the bookmakers had a big sigh of relief. But this was on the verge of being one of the most successful gambles of all time in anything, and it was done in a way that nobody could have predicted. You could honestly write a book on it, and I would read it and buy it.
Well, there you go. Maybe that's your lockdown three. That's your project right there. Right, good stuff. Friday Night Racing on Off the Ball is brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie. We'll see you next Friday afternoon at 3 o'clock. Go easy.
Friday Night Racing
on Off the Ball,
brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie.
The OTB Podcast Network, with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein powered chicken bites.